We've been talking to Richard Dull in his book, After Disclosure, written with his friend and mine, Bryce Zabel. Ann Streber is with us to answer any questions you may have about your Close Encounter experiences. Later tonight, we're going to be talking to someone who's never been on Close before, Mark Booth, talking about the secret history of the world. He has written A History of the World as It is Seen from Inside the Secret Societies that actually run this world. It's a remarkable experience, and we're going to have quite an interesting time with him. We've been talking about the questions of disclosure and what it all means and why it is so secret. Well, these are questions, of course, that have been an enormous part of my own personal life, and I haven't gotten to the final answers yet, but I do feel fairly certain at this point that there is someone who is actively, very actively out there funneling and controlling this information so that it does not reach us. We're going to ask Richard Dolan who that is. Why are they doing it? Would it be perhaps dangerous for disclosure to take place? I've got some ideas about that, and I'll bet you he does too. You know, this week, by the way, on Dreamland, which is on unknowncountry.com, it's our weekly radio show on Unknown Country, Ann Streber is talking to Trish McGregor about something called the secrets of synchronicity. Synchronicity isn't supposed to exist, but if you're alive, despite what they say, you know that it does exist. What are its secrets? What does it actually mean? What is behind it? Well, they get into that on Dreamland. On Dreamland, every week we try to go deeper and deeper. So when we come back, we're going to be talking to Richard Dolan, and we're going to be going deeper into the question, is the UFO phenomenon dangerous, or has somebody screwed up monumentally, and is that why they won't tell us the truth? We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. We're back with Richard Dolan. We'll be getting to your calls in just a few moments. Richard, gosh, we've got so much to go through tonight. It's just incredible. But I think I want to jump around a little bit. One of the things that has interested me a lot is what are the legal requirements that are imposed on people who are keeping these secrets? In other words, if I were to ask a person who had signed a security agreement, had a clearance, and knew about UFOs, if he had any knowledge of this or if he had any understanding of it, would he be, or if the government did, excuse me, would he be required to lie to me, or would he be just able to say, I don't know?
No, he would in many cases be required to lie to you. This much we know for sure.
That's very, very important.
Absolutely. There was a U.S. Senate report in, it was 1997, that described black budget programs. Now, recall, you know, today, black budget, people throw that term around a lot. But in the 90s, it was still quite new. And in the late 90s, the U.S. Senate actually looked into black budget programs or black programs. And it was... they discussed what were known as waived programs, otherwise known as unacknowledged programs. And what we're talking about are what are called special access programs, SAPs or SAPs. And in fact, the Senate report noted that anyone involved in these unacknowledged special access programs or waived programs were ordered to deny that their program existed, even to superior officers. And you couldn't just say no comment. That wasn't good enough. So you, if you had to lie, that was required of you, even to superior officers in the military.
That means if a friend of yours, also in the military, also with a clearance, but with not the right clearance, came to you and said, well, is this any of this, is there anything in any of this, you would have to lie and say no.
That's exactly right. You would have to lie, because you know, look, people aren't that stupid. If you tell your friend, if your friend asks you after you've had a good career in these sensitive programs, and you say, "Come on, just let me know," was there really a ET related program when you're? I mean, And if you're asking me that, and I just say, well, I have no comment to say about that, Whitley, you're going to put two and two together and know that it happened. So I would have to lie to you in order to protect the program. And that's just how it is.
Now, I have another, and it's a deeply personal question here, as well as a more general question about UFOs. After I published Communion, one of my uncles called me and said he'd read it with great interest and would like to talk to me about it. And he had been doing very secret work in the Air Force all of his life. No one in his family, not even his own wife, knew what he did. So I was terrified. He was retired at the time. I was, of course, excited about this. And we got in a plane and went down to San Antonio and had lunch with him, where he proceeded to lay out what he had done during the aftermath of the Roswell incident, which was to participate in the reassembly attempt to reassemble the debris that had been brought to Wright Field from Dallas, and ultimately from Roswell.
Right.
And he introduced me to his commanding officer, Art Exon, which I said earlier in the show. Now, here's my question about this. These guys had the type of clearances we're talking about. They were, both of them, extremely loyal officers. Now, why did they do this? There was a limit to it. My uncle wouldn't go on the record at all. General Exon went on the record with far less than he actually said to me. And I was kind of left. I wrote a novel about it because I couldn't get any documentation out of him. What was that about, do you think?
Well, because people aren't robots, at least not yet. We're still human beings. We still have emotions. We still have ethics and morality. And, you know, frankly, you can sign away your life forever and think that that's going to hold, but then you start thinking over your life as you get older, after you've left the military. And yes, the orders are still supposed to hold, but they don't every time. I mean, there are deathbed confessions. People do it. Toward the end of their lives, people often have a philosophical change of heart, and they think, you know what, this is too important, and I'm going to share it. Now, not everyone is the same, and some people continue to protect those programs right up until the end. We all know of various cases where, you know, it goes one way or the other.
Well, a good case is Colonel Jesse Marcel, whose son, Dr. Marcel, a wonderful guy, is going to be with you at your conference shortly. Colonel Marcel, at videotape he made, speaking frankly about the debris, the materials that he found at Roswell, dovetailed in amazingly with a conversation I had with a Dr. Robert Sauerbacher, whom I think you also have spoken to, if I'm not
correct. You spoke with Dr. Robert Sauerbacher?
Yes, I did.
Fascinating.
I spoke to him at a very odd moment. I spoke to him, and he asked me, I called him, I got him his number from Stanton Friedman, as I recall.
It had to be in 83 or 84, I assume.
Well, it was, when did he die?
I think he died in 84, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, because I seem to remember, it must have been right after my close encounter, whenever it was, because for whatever reason, I was inspired to call him and talk to him. I called him and I talked to him, and it's interesting if this was before the encounter. It must have been right in that immediate time. And he asked me, the encounter had already happened because he asked me to write it down and send it to him, and I did. I sent it to him in an overnight envelope. It was a UPS that just started an overnight service out in our cab, where our cabin was. And the UPS man called me the next day. This is when, if they couldn't deliver an overnight package, they called you instead of just throwing it away, which often seems to happen now. In any case, called me and said, this man is dead. So when I called him, who did I talk to, do you think? I mean, what was going on? I was, you see what I'm driving at here?
I do. You're saying you had a conversation with someone who said he was Sauerbacher?
Said he was Sauerbacher, yeah.
Sauerbacher was dead by then?
Well, I don't know. I'm unable to find out because I don't know exactly when the conversation took place. But he did tell me this. He said that when electron microscopes had been invented, they looked at the Roswell foil from Roswell and found that it was welded at the molecular level. That was fascinating.
Vastly beyond, obviously.
Yeah. Far beyond where we are now.
Now, Sarbach, you know, he was one of the most important people in the history of all of this, because what happened was he was one of the key defense scientists in the early 50s and into the 60s, especially the 50s, who had interaction with the UFO cover-up. He knew everyone that was needed to know. He was like this boy genius in his early years. And what happened was he had a conversation with a Canadian scientist named Wilbert Smith, and they talked about UFOs, how top secret they were, and so on. Smith wrote a memo to his superiors. The memo finally made the light of day, in which he said, I spoke with this important American scientist, told me UFOs were higher classified than the H-bomb, and so on. Sarbacher's name eventually came out, and that is how people got to talk to Sarbacher in the early 80s, and in fact, he confirmed everything that Smith had written from years before. He wrote an extended two-page, single-space typed letter detailing the UFO program as he knew it from the 50s. It's just fascinating. And then he died. He died in 1984. I'm almost certain that he died that year. So depending on when you spoke with him, if it was in 84, you could very well have been one of the last people to talk to Dr. Robert Sarbacher.
Well, it's very strange, because I thought I talked to him in early 86.
Well, maybe I'm just wrong about the dates. I'm trying.
Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. It was a fascinating conversation. I hope it was with Sarbacher and not somebody else.
I hope so.
In any case, let's go on here. We've got a lot of calls waiting. Let's go to the phones. Let's see, Ellie in the East Coast in Island Pond, Vermont. Hi, Ellie.
Oh, hi. Nice to talk with you. I met you and your wife when I lived in Connecticut with Omega Productions down there.
Oh, a long time ago, yeah.
God, wasn't that just years and years ago, like at the very beginning? And I was the one who was having you sign the Nature's End book that you had, and I was starting to explain how I thought that was the whole point of everything, was that they were the UFOs and those people were trying to get us in sync with what was happening. And now what's happening with Japan and everything, and I kind of wish all this stuff about documentation would go away and people would just, you know, listen to them as to we better get our act together and start trying to get survival camps or something going. That's why I'm up here in Vermont. And I just wanted to say I appreciate all the work you and Ann have done. And what's worrying me is not only is the documentation disappearing, but as we are getting older, you and a lot of people who were at the beginning and authentic, it worries me that if we all start dying off, you know, after a certain amount of time, you know, you wonder if disclosure is never going to happen, because all the authentic people that were actually at the beginning of all this will all die off. And I was just wondering if that ever...
That's a really good question. Richard, how do you respond?
Well, I think disclosure is going to happen, and it's going to be a big freight train that's going to hit us all really right in the noggin, because no one's ever going to be expecting it. We're never going to be ready for it. No one's ready for their first baby either, but that happens too. Disclosure is going to happen, I argue, because, look, you can't stop time. We are transforming ourselves as a society, as a species, every second of every day at this point. This isn't normal times. This isn't the year 1500. It's not the year 1900. It's not even 1990. We are in high speed moving down the highway, and what's going to happen is that within another few years, we, the people, are going to have capabilities of extracting information from around us, communicating that information to each other in such a way, I believe, that something is going to happen that will be undeniable. The powers that be will never, ever voluntarily give this secret up. Never.
Never. They never will, no.
But they'll do it when they're forced to. And they'll do it in order to attempt to keep control of the spin, to keep ahead of the curve. And I think they'll fail, by the way.
Oh, of course they'll fail.
Yeah.
You know, that gets me to the Jerusalem UFO incident.
Hey, can I just jump in?
Oh, go right ahead.
Sarbacher died in July of 1986, Whitley. So you
Thank
were
goodness. I thought I was going nuts.
No, your memory is good. And
my memory is good. So it must have been, I must have written him then in early 86 in the conversation. Thank God. Because, I was...
I think you spoke to the real guy there.
Well, he got the letter from me literally on the day he died. And of course, I asked it was the first thing I'd written about the whole experience to anybody. I asked the UPS man to send it back, and it never was returned, sadly enough. But it didn't matter because it was all still in my head. I didn't lose anything. But it was a remarkable conversation, and I'm glad that you found that information.
I'm sorry to have cut you off, but
No, that's quite all right. I'm glad you did. But anyway, let's get back to the Jerusalem UFO. Yeah. I was pretty impressed by the first two videos that came out. Then there was a third video that appeared almost immediately that had the look to me of a fairly clumsy piece of CGI work.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Now, it was so astonishingly immediate. In other words, the two videos showed up, which were really pretty hard to dispute because they're taken from different locations in the same city, showed exactly the same thing happening. Right. And then immediately, a third video that's a rather painful hoax showed up too. What was going on there, do you think?
Well, you know, it reminded me of all the fake Osama bin Laden pictures that showed up right after 9/11. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, you got to wonder, someone might be cooking these things up. You know, I live in mortal terror, by the way, of UFO videos on YouTube. I'm absolutely terrified of them because people send me these things all the time. It's like, Rich, look at this. Rich, look at that. What do you think of this one? And, like, I don't know. You know, I do my best. I try to look at these. I try to figure out, does that look real? I don't know. I talk to people. I try to figure it out. I try every opportunity I can to write to the person who's got the YouTube channel, and I ask them, what do you know about this? I mean, the thing is...
And how often do they tell you?
Seldom,
exactly.
Almost never. In fact, I've got a couple right now that are in process. I don't really talk about these a lot, but I'm always trying behind the scenes to find out. This video looks pretty good. Let's write to this guy.
I have a group of experts. We have a section of Unknown Country called Out There, and we don't research the videos that go up on it. We just put up basically interesting videos, but some of them look occasionally rather good.
I agree. I totally agree.
And I have experts who look them over, and often they can tell whether or not they're fakes. And 90% of the ones that I think are real turn out to be fakes.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, God.
But that's good to keep in mind.
There's one up on my website right now, which if you go to unknowncountry.com, you'll see it's the main story. That UFO is authenticated. That's an absolutely authentic UFO. It is real. It is a genuine unknown. So if you want to see a photograph of a genuine unknown, folks, go up there. It's a video clip, and the whole video clip is elsewhere on the site. But go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, your site's looking really good, by the way, I got to say.
Oh, thanks.
The Jerusalem video, like all other videos I get shown, I'm afraid of. I'm really chicken about a lot of things. I'll dive into things once I feel like I've laid the groundwork. I try to be very careful and cautious. Videos just scare me to daylights. But the Jerusalem one, I have to say, the first two always struck me as they looked good. Then there was the one of the tourists that I'm sure you're referring to, which
yes.
fake right from the get-go. And there were some very, very good analyses of that. Basically, what you had is a JPEG image that was enhanced a little bit. Actually, there was no motion going on. You got all these people talking.
Right.
And then there was a fourth video that came out from a bunch of high school students that were driving in like a van, and they get out and they shoot it from another angle. And then there's even more stuff. Now, my attitude about this for the longest time was agnosticism, simply because none of these people came out to talk. It's one thing to look at videos from anonymous people. It doesn't mean a lot to me, but when you've got to at least get a couple of witnesses to talk. So now we're at the point where one of these guys has come out in the last couple of weeks.
Right.
I'm trying to remember how to pronounce his name, and I will certainly botch it. I had it here a moment ago, but
we're getting to the break anyway. So you can practice over the break, over the course of the break, because we have come up on the break, and we're going to be right back with Richard Dolan and your calls. And we're back. We've been talking to Richard Dolan, his book, After Disclosure, written with our mutual friend Bryce Sable. Later, we're going to be talking to Mark Booth about the secret history of the world. How does it really work? What do the secret societies know that we do not know? That is going to be a very interesting conversation. We're going to be going to your calls in just a moment. Richard and I have been talking about UFOs, about disclosure. I'm going to tell you a little story, and then we're going to come right back. Ann and I had a weekend some years ago with the great and late lamented John Mack and with the late Lawrence Rockefeller. Mr. Rockefeller, much to the embarrassment of his family, took an intense interest in UFOs. And during this weekend, we spent together at the home of a mutual friend. Mr. Rockefeller recounted an experience he had had with the Clintons at his ranch in Montana. He had taken them to the ranch when Clinton was in the White House. One of his purposes was to bring up the UFO issue. He had completed a little booklet about UFOs and all of the best cases, which was then kind of secret, but eventually was published publicly. And he gave the book to Bill and Hillary. And the next morning, when Hillary came down, she came down early, and she said, "We don't want to talk about that subject." This is what Rockefeller told me and Ann. And then later in the day, they were outdoors. I think he said they were riding, as I recall. And he said something, Clinton said something that he'll probably deny he ever said, but I think it's quite fascinating. Once they were well away from any public spot, Rockefeller said to us that he said, "You know that thing, that subject, the UFO thing, that's a tar baby, a tar baby. You know, Br'er Rabbit, the folkloric tales from Arkansas. A tar baby is something that Br'er Rabbit came along," and he said hello to the tar baby. The tar baby wouldn't talk to him, so he finally got mad and socked him. And the more he touched the thing, the more he got tangled up in the tar until finally he was trapped. Is that what the secrecy is all about? Are they afraid of getting entangled in a trap? Is that why they won't tell us? Well, when we come back, Richard Dolan and I are going to take your calls. We'll find out what you think about it. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. We're back with Richard Dolan. Richard's website, keyholepublishing.com. That's keyholepublishing.com. His new book, AD, After Disclosure, written with his friend Bryce Zabel, forward by Jim Morris. Let's go directly to the phones. We're loaded up with calls. I'm going to go first to Richard in Las Vegas, Nevada. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Whitley.
And thank you for waiting, Richard.
Oh, I'm very excited and pleased to be able to talk with both of you gentlemen. I did get a copy of that document, the BAE that you're talking about, from Lawrence Rockefeller directly after he put it out from someone he knew. And I think it could be a tar baby, but it's a tar baby, I think, that we have to get into. I'm calling some answers on abduction and intent. I saw a film a few days ago, in fact, called The Fourth Kind. It was about a psychiatrist in Nome, Alaska.
Right.
Who had patients who all experienced the same things under hypnosis. Are you gentlemen familiar with that?
Yeah, I know that. We know the director. Ann and I know the director. And I might say that it's a faux documentary. It's not real. In other words, these aren't real cases.
No, but they put them side by side with what they said was the real people.
But it wasn't. It wasn't.
No, it's not. It's entirely false.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely. And it's really caused some damage because a lot of people like yourself did not realize that. It was done very well. It was done at least, superficially. You look at it, it's like, wow, this is really creepy. None of it is true.
And I'm a film camera.
Not zero.
No, it's a completely false documentary.
This is Ann Strieber, and I made a mistake with the director because we had a big lunch with him, and I gave him a lot of gold.
Yeah, I think she did.
A lot of my information.
Oh my goodness.
For instance, the fact, I have not seen the film. I didn't want to see the film. But, for instance, people tell me the digital clocks are shown on there, reading 333. This is something I've learned from reading letters from abductees and talking to them. They often wake up, see their clock reads 3:33,
yes,
and they have a visitor experience.
At that time, yeah, that happened to me. What we didn't know when we were talking to this director was that he was going to make something that looked like a documentary, or we wouldn't have done it. We thought he was making a feature film, and so he very kindly and sweetly invited us to lunch, and we went and had lunch with him. And then the next thing we knew, this film did come out, and it did create a lot of confusion. Let's go on now to, in the first time caller line, to Sid in Abilene, Texas.
Hello?
Hi, Sid.
Hi, sir. I appreciate y'all taking this call tonight.
Sure thing. What's up?
I'd like to ask a question to the man on the other side.
Yes, sir.
Richard Dolan, right?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I couldn't remember his name. When I was about 8 years old, I woke up in the middle. I don't know what time it was. I just woke up. Something woke me up. And I noticed there was a light in my room. Because I first just opened my eyes and I could see a light in my room. And I turned around and looked on the other side of my brother who slept with me in the same bed. I looked over him, and there was this object in the middle of my room. And it was shaped kind of like a funnel that was upside down. That's the way it was shaped.
Yes.
And it had three dimensions. It had a inner part that was turning, like it was turning one direction. And then another outer dimension was turning a different direction. And then the outer part of it was turning in a different direction. But it was spinning so fast, it looked like it was standing still. But you could see it, you could tell it was spinning because it had these electric waves going through them.
How large did it look to you?
It looked about 5'4".
You mean the funnel was about 5'4"?
Yes, sir.
Like the size of a person?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Anything else you remember?
Yeah, I watched it for a while, and I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I tried to figure out what it was. I'd never seen nothing like it before. So I closed my eyes, and I laid back down. I said, well, I must be dreaming, you know, because I probably ain't even awake. So I sat there, and I counted to 20, and I rose up, and I looked over, and it was still there. And it was spinning so fast that, you know, it just looked like it was standing still. But it didn't make no noise at all, and no sound, and I watched it. It started coming toward the bed where I was at, and I started backing up against the wall behind me, and my heart was beating like a 20-pound hammer, and this thing stopped at the edge of the bed, and it went into the next room that was adjacent to this room, and I watched it, and then it went through the wall like it was just passing through it, and it was so simple. It just passed through. It didn't give no... It was so solid looking, but yet it went through the wall like it had no problem at all.
Okay.
Now, anything else relating to that, like any other crazy experiences in your life, or is that the
one? Yes, sir. I seen about 3 years ago, I was in Hobbs, New Mexico at my father-in-law's house for 4th of July, and me and him were standing out on the side and was talking, and I was looking down the road as we was talking, and I seen this van running down the road. But he looked kind of strange looking, you know. He didn't look like he was all there. And I kept looking, and he wouldn't, because he was made out of cellophane.
Okay, we have all got many stories like this. And as Ann Strieber would tell you, this kind of thing, the bedroom visitation, inexplicable bedroom visitation, happens quite often. But what this tells us, I think, is that we just don't have the first idea of what is going on. Now let's go to the international line, Mary in Ottawa. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I guess my question is for all of you. I just want to ask, how do we ever expect to get disclosure, you know, even by what they tell us or what they show us, just by personally knowing how secretive, deceitful, and evil our governments are.
Thank you for asking this, because this is really one of the key issues that Bryce and I deal with in our book. look, we're dealing with a secrecy institution. What they do is they lie. They lie every single day to hide the truth from you and from me and from everybody else. So exactly, why would we expect them to tell the truth? And the answer is they're not going to tell the truth. They're never going to. And the only, see, disclosure is not the end of the game. Disclosure is the beginning of the real fight. Once a disclosure is made, it will only be done in order to save their own behinds, because the whole rest of the world already knows. That is the only reason they're going to do it. And what's going to happen then is, all of the can of worms opens up, all of the questions. People are going to want to know, how have you kept this secret all these years? How have you been able to manipulate the mainstream media, the academic world, the scientific community? What is the nature of the secrecy program? What have you been studying? None of these secrets are going to come out immediately. All of them are going to have to be pried out by one citizen action after another, after another, after another. In other words, disclosure is not going to be an all-in-one process. It's going to happen over many years, slowly, agonizingly, probably very unsatisfactorily, because, look, it's unlikely, frankly, I think, that disclosure is going to happen with the president standing next to a three-foot-tall gray alien at the podium. They're probably not just going to come down there and say, oh, yeah, here we are. So we're going to have an ability, probably, as a society, to prove that they're here, but we may not be able to yank them out and bring them down so we can look at them. And so there's going to be debates and arguments and disagreements and violence and all kinds of unpleasantness that's going to happen as a result of this. All of it, I believe, is going to be inevitable. Very little of it will be fun. Some of it may be exhilarating, and some of it may just be a real bummer. But the fact is, we're going to have to go through it. We have no choice. The truth cannot be stopped indefinitely.
I have a feeling that the first thing that we're going to find out is it's real. The second thing is people are going to ask, well, what happened to me? And then the third thing is going to be we have no idea and we can't stop it and we can't do a thing about it. And that third thing is probably why they will not disclose. Let's keep going. Let's go to Mike on the wild card line and in Mike in Arizona. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Whitley. Thank you for your book. I read it years ago, and very enjoyable and scary even. I may read it again, but I'll probably leave a light on this time.
Yeah, well, keep reading my books. I've got one coming out in a month called Hybrids.
I will do, will do.
What's your question?
My question, perhaps it is the government hiding this because these aliens are not as friendly as we would like them to believe. Or as we would like to believe.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that.
Also, I was wondering, with all our technology and early warning, why don't we shoot one down? Or if we do that, would that cause a war?
They may have been shot down. There's reason to believe that we humans have acquired more than one of their craft at various times. Our jets chase them on a regular basis. In other words, our military's had their own many, many close encounters with these. They have had orders to shoot on numerous occasions. It would not shock me in the least that we got lucky a couple of times and took one or two of them down. We don't know this for sure, but I would suspect at least it's very possible. We have several confirmed cases in other nations where missiles were fired at these objects to no effect. But it doesn't mean that we've failed every single time. The thing is, there is reason to be suspicious. You've got people suspicious that there's something bad going on. There are people in this field, some who argue that all the ETs are benevolent, are here to help us. I don't subscribe to that point of view. My sense from looking at the sum total of evidence is that we are very, very interesting, we human beings here on planet Earth, very interesting. And anybody who's got the ability to look at us, I think, is very interested in us right now. They don't all necessarily have the same agendas. Some may be somewhat benign, others not so much. I've, like Whitley, I've had my own people that I've talked to about this, and I've had reason to believe that there may, in fact, be a silent cold war going on. In other words, something off the records, unofficial, but going on nonetheless, between some of us and some of them, and who knows what kinds of alliances are even involved.
And as you point out in After Disclosure, there's a lot of money missing that's gone somewhere.
Indeed, there is. And, it'll be impossible, I think, to get a handle on all of the money that's been siphoned out of our official government and our economy and so on. But a lot has gone out. And some of it, I think, yes, has gone into a kind of black budget infrastructure that deals with this problem exactly.
Let's keep going. Let's go to Cliff in Houston, Wildcard Line. Hello, Cliff.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I firmly believe that the aliens tell us what we can do, because I don't think these presidents and these generals and these leaders of these countries could by any shape, way, matter, or form keep their mouths shut about this. They're scared. They're absolutely scared to death. And I don't think they're scared about telling us, because even if they said tomorrow morning, there's 400 different kind of aliens, they made Earth, they made you, 99% of the planet would go, I don't believe it. It's a new scare tactic. It's a new way to try
right.
to control us. If the aliens themselves came out of the sky, half the people would say, it's Hollywood.
That's
it's
right.
Not real. It's make-believe. It's the same thing.
Well,
if Jesus came back tomorrow,
yeah.
you'd have to prove it.
Right.
Nobody would believe him.
People will believe it under certain conditions. I mean, they're not going to believe it if tomorrow Barack Obama was to say, yeah, as a matter of fact, it's all true, people. No, I doubt it as well. He's going to have to present a case. I argue the only way that case is going to be made at all ever is if they're forced into making it, if something already has leaked out or has come out that's going to force the issue. In other words, they're only going to disclose when the whole rest of the world knows already, and then they're going to admit the obvious. And that's when the struggle is going to begin for the actual truth, only then. Right now, this is all prologue, what we're living in. So I agree with you. I mean, people will be skeptical. It's going to be very difficult. Who would want to be the president to tell the world that this is real? You're going to have to present your case to a very deeply skeptical scientific community around the world.
Right.
They're just not going to roll over and say, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because they've made an enormous commitment, and not to mention the media, have made enormous commitments to the idea that this is, at best, a painful joke.
Precisely. So it will happen, though, if something between now and that moment of disclosure occurs that forces it. A WikiLeaks type of scenario I think is entirely possible. In other words, something that comes out that is a damning statement attesting to the reality of this that really cannot easily be denied. Or I think maybe a little more likely, a major sighting that occurs in a situation where we have technology that doesn't even exist yet today. Look, we're living in such revolutionary times. Smartphones with cameras and video, this is a fairly recent development. What are we going to be having available in 5 or 10 years? The capabilities of recording and communicating these events, I think, are going to be vastly greater even than today. We cannot assume that we're just living in a static era. Tomorrow is not going to look like today. We're living in a world in which computing experts predict that your computer within 20 years is going to be talking to you as a conscious, sentient being.
I found that out when I was working on hybrids, that conscious machines are around the corner. It's not something that's going to happen. Most of us in our lifetimes will know this. And what we don't know yet is whether or not an intelligent machine will become self-aware.
Precisely. And so what I'm saying is that our civilization is going to have a different order of intelligence just in another decade or two. We'll have different capabilities at our disposal.
Richard Dolan, it has been great having you with us. His book, After Disclosure, go to keyholepublishing.com to find out what he is doing at any given time. There's a conference coming up next week. This has been a terrific conversation. Callers, thank you very much, Richard Dolan. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.